It looks like Kemba Walker is coming back, and ESPN's Mike Breen joins the podcast. It's the Wednesday Locked On Celtics. Millie's, let's go.
So hype right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my baby, ma. Anything's possible.
Rain and Jay's back with the vengeance. Back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. Ooh. This the truth like 34. Yeah. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. The crowd goes crazy. Most in-depth coverage on the daily. Mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings. Focus like Danny at the deadline. Global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line. Play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day. Trying to stay in tune with the C's, it's the best way. Melly.
Wednesday hump day, and I am here to get you through it. I'm John Corrales of MassLive.com, and I want to thank you for making this show part of your daily routine. Coming up in segments 2 and 3, ESPN's Mike Breen, who is in town to call the Boston Celtics Brooklyn Nets, which was supposed to be the return of Kyrie Irving. We know it is not the return of Kyrie Irving. He may play in the game on Friday. I wouldn't be surprised if he plays in the game on Friday because it's at home and, well, you know. Kemba Walker may play on Wednesday. In fact, he's probable to play. The Boston Celtics announcing on Tuesday that Kemba Walker is probable to play, which means he went through the practice. He has apparently cleared through the version of the concussion protocol that the Celtics put him through. It wasn't the official protocol, as you heard on the last podcast, but it was the Boston Celtics, out of an abundance of caution, let's say, putting him through their paces to make sure that he's fine, to make sure that he's healthy. And if you didn't hear that podcast, just as a quick recap, the Celtics, after Kemba, his injury, went through all the tests in Dallas, was cleared to come back home to Boston, put him through his own series of tests. He never lost consciousness. He never had a concussion. But because concussions are kind of tough to fully diagnose and they can happen at different times, it's not just immediately after the head injury, they decided we're going to put him through the concussion protocol. Not officially enter the concussion protocol, but they put him through the same paces of the concussion protocol. So he went through everything, and the last step was going through the practice on Tuesday. The Celtics did not have an official practice, but they put him through a workout apparently, and it looks like he came through fine. So he's listed as probable, I assume, just so we can wake up and make sure that he doesn't wake up with any symptoms. Again, that's not the official word, but just to be clear, because you don't know with a concussion or anything like that, just let him do his thing. He seems fine. Let him wake up in the morning. And if he feels good in the morning, it seems like he'll play. The Celtics do have a morning shoot-around scheduled. So we'll find out probably around lunchtime whether everything is 100%. But it looks like Kemba Walker is going to play. So to recap, Kyrie Irving has an impingement in his right shoulder and he's going to miss a significant amount of time. Kemba Walker looks like he ran headfirst into a brick wall, ran off on a stretcher, got carted off on a stretcher, he misses one game. So, I mean, I don't want to belittle Kyrie Irving's injury, but, I mean, we'll see. We'll see. So, that's the news for the Boston Celtics on this Wednesday. Other than that, I don't have much because the Celtics had an off day. Everything's pretty low-key. I haven't heard anything new on Gordon Hayward. The only other thing that happened, which was pretty funny, was Grant Williams went to the Celtics offices and handed everybody a candle, a little mini candle that says, "Let's have a great year. Appreciate all you do for us," from Grant, which is the most adorable thing that you're ever going to see out of a basketball player. Like, come on. If you go to the Celtics Twitter, you'll see it. It's just, I don't even know how to put it other than it's adorable. Grant's just such an adorable guy. Like, he's just funny. It's wild. And I don't want to make the comparison directly to Kevin Garnett, but the difference between the Grant Williams persona off the floor and the Grant Williams competitor is wide. And I haven't seen a person change as much as this since Kevin Garnett. Kevin Garnett changed a whole lot more, let's say. I don't think Kevin Garnett was anywhere near as like lovable and goofy. Like he was, you know, he's a fun person off the court, but not this level of like adorable. I don't think anybody will ever call Kevin Garnett adorable. So when he turned it up, he went like way past 11 on the volume meter. But Grant, the competitor Grant is fiery, and he's like a 180 from who he is off the court. But handing out candles to all the Celtics employees, man, I don't know how else to put it. He's just a fun-loving goofball. So I'll just leave it at that. Before I do, I just want to point out that I'm recording this just as the Mavs game is starting. And wow, those uniforms that they're wearing are bad. And we thought the Celtic City edition was bad. Oh, man. That's not great. It's kind of like gradient blue with a bad graffiti Mavs. Like, it's not even full graffiti. And they've added this highlighter green thing to it. I don't know. You're going to have to check that out. Look at the highlights. When we come back, Mike Breen joins the podcast. He is in town to broadcast Celtics and Nets, and I talked to him for about 20 minutes, and you'll hear what he has to say when we come back on the Locked On Celtics podcast.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You guys know Mike Breen from the ESPN broadcast. He's probably one of the definitive play-by-play voices of our time. And he does the Knicks home broadcast. He's a New York native. Broadcasting the Knicks was a lifelong dream, and he's realizing it on top of broadcasting the ESPN games and obviously the ESPN on ABC games. Enjoyed having this conversation with him. As brief as it was, 20 minutes is not really a whole lot of time to talk much to a guy like Breen, who's been around the NBA for a while. But it was a fun conversation, a good conversation. The first part of it was all about basketball and the Celtics. The second part of it was more about him and his broadcasting career. So enjoy this conversation with ESPN's Mike Breen. Mike, thank you for joining the podcast. Let's just dive right into this because you're doing Celtics Nets. How disappointed are you that you don't get to call Kyrie Irving's return to Boston?
That was one of the games, John, when the schedule came out. I was like, okay, that's going to be a fun night. And it still might be. It might be a great game, but a little of the luster has been taken off it. So hopefully the next time they play in Boston, so we get to see it.
We'll see. We'll see. I know Celtics fans are not really holding their breath for that. How much time did you block out to pause for booze for Kyrie?
Yeah, in play-by-play, they call it laying out. I had planned on laying out quite a bit.
So you got to see the Celtics in Los Angeles. Hey, was that the only game you had done of the Celtics this season?
That was the first. No, actually, I did them earlier in a Knick game at the Garden.
Ah, right, because obviously you do that as well. So Celtics, a bit of a surprise for everyone. I heard you and Doris talking about it a little bit. What's your, I guess, take on what you've seen so far from the Celtics?
You know, I'm not surprised. I really thought this year they had a chance to be as good as anybody in the East. And yeah, I understand going in a Milwaukee and a Philadelphia might want to put them a little bit above, and I'm okay with somebody saying that. But if they're a little below them, it's a very small little area, because I think for the Celtics 2 years ago, their strength was their chemistry. That's what got them to the conference finals, obviously, in addition to, you know, talent and coaching. But the chemistry was so good with that team. And last year, the weakness was probably the lack of the chemistry. Mm-hmm. But I've seen early in the season, to me, that chemistry that I saw 2 years ago is back. Guys that enjoy playing with each other, guys that are rooting for each other. And I'm not throwing this all on Kyrie Irving. Obviously, it was not a good match last season. But I do think that this team, this group, when he's been taken off and now they're on their own again, and you add a guy like Kemba Walker, I think chemistry is going to be their strength again, in addition to just having talent and coaching. And I think it's when Brad Stevens is at his best, I think any coach really. But just overall, I think they're going to be a team that's going to be a really difficult out. And when you look at three particular guys in Gordon Hayward, Jason Tatum, and Jaylen Brown, that were all just not at their top of their games last year for, you know, they had their own individual reasons. This year, I think we're going to see the best of all three of them. Obviously, Hayward with the injury, but that's what gives me the thought that I think the Celtics can be as good as anybody in the East.
You've been around this league for a bit, and so what do you see in a team that goes through something like what Boston did, when they've got talent that's unrealized, but then some of that same talent that was unrealized before is now on the team that is overachieving? I mean, this isn't the first time it's happened in the NBA. What, through your experience, what kind of is the metamorphosis between that team, the lessons that they learn, and becoming a good team again?
You know, it's the old phrase, John, of that which doesn't kill you makes you better. And I think, you know, for their growth, we forget 2 years ago, that year they go to the conference finals, just how young Jaylen Brown and Tatum were.
Right.
I mean, they were so young, yet they performed at such a high level. And it's almost like, wow, I didn't expect it to get for either one of them to be that good that quickly. But they did, and they did it on the biggest stage. So, you know, the next year, the high hopes that they're going to take it to the next step, and they had to learn how to deal with, you know, a star player who came in and had the ball in his hands a lot. They had to deal with all of a sudden being looked at as, hey, you're not reaching your potential, either team-wise or individual-wise. And I think that's great growth for both of them. And I think they both have come back this year with that kind of serious to show just how good they are, how consistent they are. And I think that's the key for both of them. I mean, we've seen flashes, more than flashes, but to be consistently a top player night in and night out is a really hard thing to do. And I think both of them are on their way. And that's all part of going through that last year, I think, was an unbelievable learning process. Painful for them at times, but I think something that's going to benefit them down the line.
It's hard to remember sometimes that these guys are both still in their rookie deals, which is still kind of nuts. It feels like they've been here for a long time. You saw Gordon Hayward. You didn't get to see Gordon Hayward in the Clippers game, but you did get to see Gordon Hayward earlier. What's your impression of Gordon Hayward from this year? Obviously, he's better, but like, what are you seeing from him?
Well, when he was at his best that last year in Utah, he was this attacking, aggressive player in so many ways, and you know, I always loved his playmaking. Sure, he can score, he can throw up on a given night, he can give you 30. But it was his playmaking that to me made him such a good player. And it was because of how aggressive he was. He just didn't have that on a regular basis last year. And you can understand that. I mean, such a horrific injury, and it's going to take a while before you lose that tentativeness. And that's what I saw early in the season. It was just like he was in attack mode all the time, and not necessarily to score, but to playmake. And, you know, he's always been a cerebral player. He's always been a player that gets other guys involved. But when push comes to shove, he's a tough player. He looks like a choir boy, but he's a tough player, and that's the way he was playing early.
You're a seasoned professional.
That's twice now you've mentioned being
age?
Around a while. So I think it's you can just say you're old.
No,
and
look,
I'll be okay with that.
I can tell you. I tell you what. As one old guy to another, I suppose. I'm no young kid either. So. But the reason I phrase it like that is through your, I'll say it this way too, your wealth of experience. How's that?
That's a nice way of saying all.
what do you make of Marcus Smart?
He'll be one of those guys that you will never, ever be able to measure his impact by numbers. You know, there's guys throughout the history of the league that have been like that. He's one of my favorite players just because of that. You know, it's the old phrase of he could be 2 for 13 from the field and still have an amazing impact on the game. You know, the cliche I always throw out a lot is he is first team all NBA grit. Mm-hmm. But he's also, you know, he's more than just toughness now. He's you know, just the way he's reading the floor. His playmaking has really gotten better. And even though his shooting percentages are probably never going to be super high, he just seems to have a knack for hitting a shot when you really need it. And I do truly believe, John, that guys like him, and again, there's not a lot, but there are a decent amount. But a guy like him, he raises the level of a team's defense, of a team's toughness, and of a team's intensity. And to me, that's the number one thing, and how he does that on a nightly basis.
When you're there, like the Clippers game, I loved that game. First of all, like playoff intensity, the defense, but Marcus Smart and Patrick Beverley were just like trying to take turns, one-upping one another. That Marcus Smart play where he strips Kawhi and dives out of bounds and save it. How do you keep yourself from swearing on air when things like that are happening? Because the inclination is to be like, holy shit, what is happening here?
Yeah, you know, John, it's that comes with being old or being experienced in that, because you
see, that's why I phrased it that way.
I have been doing it a long time, and I still, the thing I love the most is I haven't lost one bit of joy for the game. And, you know, I love the star players that are doing magnificent things, whether it's Antetokounmpo or Doncic right now. But I've always had a special place in my heart for the type of players who just will do anything to help his team win. And that's where I usually get the most excited. But, you know, you just learn to make sure you don't swear because you want to continue to get have a job. But that's to me is almost harder to do because I've always felt partial to those kind of players, the hardworking players who, you know, who do the little things, the intangibles, whatever you want to say, whatever cliche you want to use. That's my favorite kind of player, and it always has been. So sometimes you have to, you know, it's okay. I really do think it's okay for an announcer once in a while to sound like a fan because I am. I'm a fan of great basketball. I'm a fan of basketball, whatever it takes to win. So sometimes you get a little overboard, but as long as you don't use profanity, I think you're okay.
That's why I'm on this side. Follow us on our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram. Let's transition to a little bit about yourself. Everybody talks about the meticulous notes you take, and you're well prepared. But to me, one of the things that stands out is your personality. I mean, you have to hold your own with the likes of Clyde Frazier. You have to hold your own with Jeff Van Gundy. And how did you develop just being who you are? Like, how did this personality come about?
Well, I don't know how to answer that, except that, you know, it takes a while. When you first start doing this, you just want to get the basics down, and you want to be a good, solid, fundamental play-by-play man. So that's all you concentrate on. And I even tell young broadcasters when I talk to them and they ask for advice – that, you know, be good at the nuts and bolts of play-by-play, and then throw in your personality, and then throw in your you know, particular phrases you like to use. I think I've always felt that you need to your viewers or your radio listeners, because that's how I started in radio, you need to get them to kind of respect you first, and then you have the right to show them a little of your personality. That's the way I do it. It's kind of old-fashioned, and I don't know if others feel the same way, but that's what I've tried to do. So early on, I wouldn't do it, John. And then as it got on, and then you have a good rapport, and this has a lot to do with it. If you have a good rapport with your analyst, you're comfortable. you feel really comfortable. So you're not afraid to show your personality and do back and forth. And like with Mark Jackson and Jeff Van Gundy, we've been friends for 25 years. I've known Doris for over 20 years. I'm doing the game with Doris tomorrow. Doug Collins and I, you know, when we worked together, we were such good friends. Same thing with Yubi. And when you have, and obviously Clyde, who I've worked with longer than anybody, when you have that comfort level and you're broadcasting with a real friend, not just a partner, a professional partner, but a real friend, I think that allows you to be more yourself on the air. Does that make sense? Because I do think that's a lot has a lot to do with it, because I'm so comfortable with the people I'm working with.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's not always going to be jam-packed action like that Celtics-Clippers games. You're going to have some downtime, some garbage time that you're going to have to fill. And if you don't like each other, that could probably get a little bit awkward, right?
Oh, there's no doubt it makes a difference. I think it's the most underrated part of, you know, when people talk about broadcast teams, it's the most underrated part when, you know, you have things in common. You know each other very well. You know likes and dislikes. So that way you can poke fun. And, you know, just for example, with Mark and Jeff, I mean, we make fun of each other and get on each other all the time. And nobody's feelings ever get hurt because we're friends.
Right.
And the stuff that we're breaking each other's horns on the air about is the same thing we're doing in the car on the way over. It's just it comes over on the air. And I think that's, at least I hope, that's what viewers can pick up on. And if I'm at home and I'm watching a game, whatever sport, and it sounds like the two announcers or three announcers really like each other, that enhances it for me, because if they're having a good time, then I'm having a good time as a viewer. So that's what you strive for.
Why basketball? What was it about basketball that drew you in early on?
Yeah, you know, good question. I mean, I grew up in a family of six boys. So it was all sports all the time in my house as a kid. So we played everything. I mean, baseball, basketball, football, dodgeball, wiffle ball. Soccer was the one sport we didn't play growing up. But I loved basketball because of the team aspect. You know, certain sports, it's a little more individual. I just loved working with my teammates when I played high school basketball and, you know, executing the perfect play or, you know, putting together this great team defense with a 3-2 zone. To me, there was nothing more satisfying than when you accomplish something on the court with a bunch of guys and you did it together. And I think that's what really drew me. And as a kid, I was influenced by the Knicks and that championship team that, you know, they were the epitome of team basketball. And obviously the Boston fans are spoiled with so many examples of that in their franchise history. So to make a long story short, the team aspect, John, is always what I loved about the sport.
It's funny. You talk about the team. You talk about Jeff and Mark in terms of a team. You talk about all of your partners in terms of a team. Yet you're in this industry that's all about, like, me, me, me. I've spent many, many years in the broadcast industry, and talent's always about talent. Obviously not always, but it's kind of interesting that you, in a prominent role, faces on there, your voice is on there, you're the recognizable one. I'm talking to you right now. You're the one promoting things. But everything you're talking about is about a team. It's kind of interesting to me. And how have you, like, advanced your career by not focusing on the, I guess, selfish aspect of things?
You know what, John, I think that goes back to how I grew up. Again, my family was, I had a great childhood, and my mother and father, they were the types that they get along with everybody, and had, you know, people skills. They just treated everybody with kindness and respect. And that's kind of the way I've tried to model myself after them. I've fallen woefully short, but I'm still trying. And I think, you know, our business, because of that team aspect, and it's not just the on-air people, there are so many important people in the truck that if one person doesn't do their job well, everybody looks bad, or it makes it hard for everybody to look good. And that's, again, that's the beauty of why I love broadcasting, is because you have all these people getting together and working. And I'm smart enough to know that I need a lot of help, whether it's from producers, directors, camera people, or my analyst, or even statistician. I have a guy that's been doing stats for me for 25 years, a guy named Dave Freed, and I'm better because he's sitting next to me. And I'm better because, you know, I have a producer in my ear who's telling me what to do. So it's not false modesty. It's a fact. And between growing up and seeing how my parents dealt with a lot of people, and then realizing it's the same thing in this business, that you've got to get along with people and you've got to trust people and work with people. It makes it a little bit easier to do it that way.
Well, I mean, I'll just take an aside here. As a former TV producer, I appreciate somebody who says that's on camera. Speaking on behalf of all of us producers and former producers, that's very much appreciated. What job came along that you didn't take that could have derailed your career?
Wow, there's a few of them. My first job out of college, and I went to Fordham University in the Bronx, and my first job out of college, I didn't get a job for about, I'm going to say about 5 or 6 months after I graduated. I worked for a radio station in Poughkeepsie, mm-hmm. Poughkeepsie, New York, and I was doing news. I wasn't doing sports, and one of my jobs is I would cover the Dutchess County legislature, so I would cover all the political goings-on in Dutchess County. And the man who was in charge of all the media relations for the Dutchess County legislature, a gentleman by the name of Tim Massey, he knew I knew nothing about anything with the Dutchess County legislature. I mean, I was going in blind on every story, and he kind of every story he'd give me a couple of facts to help me report. And he just, I mean, we became great, great friends. He just was the person he was one of those people that went out of his way to make sure I could figure out what I was doing. So I did that for a couple of years, and I was making very little money up there, which was okay with me. And then he decided to leave that position. He was getting a better job, and he offered that. He said, he goes, I think you'd be great at this. And the money was like four times the amount of what I was making as a radio reporter. And obviously it was interesting, and the idea of making money seemed to be a pretty cool thing. And I thought about it, and if I would have taken that, my career would have taken a complete different path, obviously. But I said, you know what? No, I really want to get into sportscasting. I want to do play-by-play, and I had a chance to do Marist basketball up in Poughkeepsie coming up. So I turned that down. So if I had taken that, who knows what would have happened.
We would see you, we'd be interviewing you on a political podcast as you covered the impeachment hearings.
And that would be frightening for all of America.
Well, Mike, I won't take up any more time. I really appreciate you joining the podcast for a little bit of time here. Celtics and Nets on ESPN. That's going to be a fun one, and I really appreciate talking to you for a little bit.
Thank you, John. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.
Just really enjoyed that conversation with Mike. He seems like just a legitimately good guy, and everything that I've read and heard and people I've talked to will say the same thing. So it was really cool to talk to Mike and get his perspective on the Celtics and on broadcasting, and glad he didn't go into that political career. So I hope you've enjoyed the show. If you're a first-time listener, please go ahead and subscribe wherever your podcasts are available, wherever you get your podcasts. We are everywhere. If you can follow me on Twitter, I'm at @RedsArmy_John. You can follow the show at LO Celtics, at Locked On Celtics on Instagram. And all of you regular listeners, give us that 5-star rating, give the show that good written review, and share the podcast. Tell everybody, listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.